Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Deborah Shane's Top Small Business Podcast and the hub for community connections and conversations. Join us weekly for lively discussions and inspiring guests on current events, careers, consumer trends, small business, and social media. Visit DeborahShaneToolbox.com to learn more about Deborah and how you can be in the spotlight. And now, your host, Deborah Shane.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Metropolis. Hope everybody is enjoying spring. Apparently, there's some snow up north, which is crazy for May, for sure. But in the meantime, I am waiting just a couple minutes here for my guest, Rohit Bhargava, who I met through ICON 15 this year, the Infusionsoft conference that I went to in Arizona, Phoenix. And he is a trained curator, founder of the Influential Marketing Group, and an expert in helping brands and leaders be more influential. He is a Wall Street Journal bestselling author of actually 5 books on topics as wide ranging as the future of healthcare, how to build a brand with personality, and why leaders never eat cauliflower. He is a trend specialist, and he has put together some fantastic trends for 2015. And I got the chance to meet up with him at the conference and spend a little bit of time with him talking about, you know, how he gathers his trends, his process, and you know, what he considers some of the most important trends that impact us right now in this time frame. So I believe we have made contact with Rohit. Hi, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. How are you, Rohit Bhargava, calling in? Where are you calling in from?
I'm in Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. How are you, my friend? How's it going?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. So I was just giving a little bit of an introduction for you to our audience, and appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. And, you and I had a little bit of time to chat about the trends that you've put together for 2015, and certainly that's something that you have been doing for a few years. And, you know, I think we talked about how important trends are to small business, and, you know, how important it is to, you know, for small businesses to actually pay attention to trends with regard to, you know, growing and their sustainability. So I guess the first thing, just give us a little bit of a bio and background on you, and tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I think, you know, a lot of things that I'm sure we'll talk about this, but I think a lot of times when it comes to small business owners and trends, myself included, a lot of times what I hear about is, you know, here's how the world is changing by 2050, you know, and it's like a lot of times we don't necessarily see a connection between that and what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. And so as we dig into it, you know, I'll share one of my points of view, which is the most valuable trends are the things that are happening in the current year. And so I do a new trend report every year, and that's sort of the basis of a lot of what I spend my time doing. And so, you know, I've always been a marketing guy. I sort of grew up in marketing agencies, in the agency world. And the benefit of that for me was that I got to work in a lot of different industries. I wasn't in financial services for 10 years and then, you know, go off to some other industry. Like, I had the chance to work on a lot of things concurrently. I was doing nonprofit work at the same time that I was working in kind of deep technology, at the same time that I was doing retail. And so I had a chance to work in a lot of different spaces and try and make the connections between them. And that's a lot of what I do now. So about 2 years ago, I left my full-time role at an agency. I was at Ogilvy when I left, and I started my own consulting practice. And the part of the mission was to just give myself more time to speak at events and write. And the other part was just to get more time to work on the things that I really wanted to work on. And so now what I do is I spend a part of the year doing trend-based research and trend work. I speak at a lot of events. I do a bunch of workshops, and I'm always kind of out there speaking to people about what's new and what's different. And so I get a chance, because I'm lucky in this way, to speak to and interact with a lot of folks at different events that we just don't generally get to do in an annual basis. And so I take all those pieces and I try and share them with folks, and that's pretty much my world these days.
Well, I think we have some similarities in our background. I think I shared with you, I grew up in the broadcast media world as well, and I was in broadcast radio sales and management for almost 24 years, and I had a lot of agencies as clients. So I, had some of the biggest agencies in Florida and, the region. I was a regional sales manager, and so I really understand a lot about that world. And I think the agency world has had to change dramatically, in the last 15 or 20 years due to so many things. Social media and technology, of course, being one for their clients, and adding the social media marketing piece into the advertising mix, if you will. So, it's really important to have a diverse background like you do in when you're working in a field like this. So, the first thing I really wanted to ask you was, what actually fascinates you the most about business and marketing trends? I mean, the trend is the trend, but what actually fascinates you the most about these trends?
I'd say easily the most fascinating thing is just how interesting the world becomes when you start to make intersections between different industries and different examples. And, I can't tell you the number of times that I'm sort of working on something, and I see an example of, just give you an example, one of the trends from the report is what I called everyday stardom. And it's a pretty simple idea. It's the basis that, we as consumers expect to be treated like superstars because we see more and more situations in our daily lives where we get to be treated like celebrities. And so, I'll be reading about Disney's billion-dollar investment in the Magic Band technology. And then the next week I'll be in New York and I'll see a billboard promoting Michelle Phan, who's this amazing girl who's got all these videos of herself putting on makeup. And she's gotten so popular that L'Oreal gave her own makeup line. And so I'll see that. And then I'll read about, a story about how couples in India are recreating scenes from Bollywood movies to put themselves at the center of the picture and use that as wedding invitations. And the fact that you can start to put all these things together and say, look, whether it's a visit to Disney or a single person creating a YouTube channel and now having her own makeup line to being the star of your own wedding cinema video, like all of these are examples of us being the superstar in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's like the intersection of all of those things becomes really interesting.
Well, it's amazing how a platform like YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, can make somebody seriously a viral success in such a short time. And that, that it kind of does. It really kind of unites people in kind of a common cultural ground when it comes to business, consumerism, and all that stuff. When you really think about it, it's pretty amazing how fast it can get out there these days, as opposed to the old days with the agency stuff where you put print ads in, you did some television commercials, you did some radio, you did some magazines. Now you have this immediacy. Do you think that's fascinating myself?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely the immediacy of things, but it's also this idea that you can now go micro viral, right? Like you don't have to go, I mean, it's one thing to like put on makeup and have millions of followers, but you know, there's also like people on YouTube who are in their second year of medical school and they've just started creating a bunch of videos saying, hey, this is what medical school's really like. You know, each one of their videos has like 8,000 people watching it. So it's not like super viral. But those 8,000 people are all students who are considering going to medical school. And so now you think about the school or the university that might benefit from reaching out to that person because they're hugely influential for that one specific topic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, when I was listening to your presentation at ICON, you talked about some really interesting down-to-earth tips for small business that, you know, they're so human. They're so human. You know, it's nothing like nothing like super secret sauce, you know, to things. You talked about being more observant, being more curious, being more thoughtful. Talk a little bit about those simple human things that have so much impact for success.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I talk a lot about is just avoiding being observationally lazy. And what I mean by that is that moment when we're standing in the checkout line and instead of looking around, we sit down and look at our phones because, you know, it's easier. So we're playing Candy Crush while we're standing in line and we just don't pay attention to what's going on around us. And I think part of the challenge is if you're an entrepreneur and you're a small business owner, like there are ideas all around us. We just train ourselves to miss out on them and not pay attention. And so what that means is we've got to now train ourselves to not be lazy. And if we can do that, then we find ourselves in a situation where we capture ideas and are able to use them in unexpected ways, in unexpected situations. And that's what we need to do. That's what we all should try and do. So that's kind of, I mean, that was, you know, that was sort of the point of my talk at ICON.
Well, and those things are really around us, surrounding us and happening every moment, because, I mean, I know for me at ICON, it was a big conference, you know, it's a lot of people there. And so it's hard to think to yourself, how do I go to a conference like this and come away with the most that I possibly can? And, you know, sometimes people go to those conferences trying to have, you know, really ambitious goals for what they want to take home instead of saying, wow, if I can meet a couple of great people and pick up a few great ideas that really apply to me and can make, you know, me better and my business better, then I've had a successful conference.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's all like those little tips that we need to learn from. And, you know, that's what I tried to offer at the ICON event because I was basically, you know, just telling the story of how I found that myself, right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, and you know, it's a good segue into this, you know, next question. And that is, you know, what has changed you personally the most in the current times? I mean, I know you left the agency business and started your own thing, but, you know, what do you see like in the last 12 or 18 months that's really changed you significantly and you know, what was it or what is it and why did it actually change you so much?
I guess I would say one of the things that changed my outlook quite a bit is the idea that now we are able to directly do a lot of things we had to get middlemen to do or middle women to do at various points in our lives and in our career. So just as an example, in publishing this latest book, I also started my own publishing company. And part of the reason I did that, and what we talked about it, was that distribution and the ability to work with the best professionals in the publishing field is now not limited anymore to working with a big publisher. Just for an example there, like my former editor at McGraw-Hill, who published my first book back in 2008, now has his own company and he's a freelancer, and I've brought him into working on one of the projects that Idea Press, my publishing company, is doing. So it's the exact same guy I worked with back when I was at McGraw-Hill, but now he's got his own gig and he's a separate guy and he's a freelancer, and so I can bring him in separately, right?
Yeah.
So no, that's sort of thing I think is possible, and it's totally transforming how we're able to do our work and what we're able to do, right?
Well, I think, you know, going as direct as possible these days is pretty amazing. And then, you know, a lot of times it's good to kind of go through the process and the flagpole as well in some regards, because it's still a good way to make some solid relationships in that type of realm as well. You know, because there's still pretty corporate, you know, stuff and still pretty there's still barriers on levels of getting to know people that you sometimes you just have to respect those. But I do believe that anything, anybody, any small business can be successful today if they want to be, and make connections with people that, I don't know why, that, you know, people think that, you know, that people are not receptive to making connections with people, even if they're in a popular or higher echelon. You know, this podcast, I've been doing it since 2009, and I always say about my podcast that it has opened more doors for me than anything I have done, Twitter, LinkedIn, you know, whatever. It has opened more doors for me because it's given me a chance to, you know, interview some people and get and feature them, and by featuring them, I kind of feature myself, you know? And
it's really, you know, it's really interesting because it gives you a chance to, you know, kind of like what I was talking about with the intersections, right? Like you have a chance to spot patterns and intersections between your guests. And so it just gives you a different and interesting viewpoint of the world. And I think that probably your listeners have the same experience because they're listening to different points of view, and so they're learning that, and then they're taking that back to their business. And yeah, I think it's just a great way of being a lifelong learner, right?
Exactly. And the podcast, which I was very early adopter to because of my background in radio and because I knew the power of listening to the spoken word. I knew what that was about. And even though we, you know, video's the king and all this stuff, and it is. I mean, in a lot of respects it is. But, man, I tell you, putting on some good earbuds and plugging into a podcast with somebody that's got something interesting to say that has a fairly decent-sounding voice, nothing like it. There's nothing like it, right? So
yeah, I think
you said,
I mean, there's something that powerful about using one sense and leaving your other senses to imagine things for yourself, which I think is a really cool thing about the spoken word, like you were saying. Like, this is why I love to, I kind of joke about my mobile office, right, which is my car. But
yeah.
I love to be in the car and listening to that spoken word because, you know, at the same time, like you're driving, obviously you need your other senses for driving, but you can have your mind sort of paying attention to the things that you're listening to. And I think it's a great way of keeping engaged.
Well, it is, and, you know, and the podcast has really come into its own this last 12 months. Something that you said really caught my attention. You talked about be elegant, use poetic principles. Explain more what you mean by that.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that I'm not sure if everybody has had this moment of taking an English literature class, or whether they even remember that, where they were taught poetry, not like childhood poetry where it's like, okay, everything has to rhyme and it's very Dr. Seussy, if that's a word. But it's more
it
of
is now.
Being poetic is choosing your words very deliberately, paying attention to the sound of one word next to the next word, and alliteration, and using metaphors to describe things without directly describing them. I mean, these are all poetic principles. And I mean, I get that I'm an English major, and so maybe I spent more, definitely I spent more time thinking about poetry than the average person. But I think that a lot of those principles definitely apply when it comes to marketing or copywriting or content creation or in journalism. I mean, I know that when you go through journalism school, you're sort of learning these principles in order to activate them against telling stories, not necessarily, creating poetry, but you're telling stories and using the same principles.
Yeah. Well, I'm very, that caught my ears mainly because I've been writing pretty much since I'm a kid, poetry, and I also am a musician and a songwriter and a singer, so I've been writing lyrics and songs for a long time, and that really caught my attention because I agree. I mean, I think everybody can have a more elegant and poetic delivery of their, communication skills. And I think that that actually goes quite a long way in the world today to be, to attract people and gain their interest. So I really,
I've been thinking there's something to this idea of teaching people to create business poetry, if you will. Maybe that's a book topic that I should explore a bit further.
I think things are evolving and changing, and new generations of consumers are in the mix. I mean, it's the opportunity to serve the consumer is going to be constantly changing because the consumer is changing. The demographics are changing. The generations are changing. And the worst thing that companies get into is they get stale and stagnant, and they just have had some success and they don't freshen things up and realize they're talking to different people. They have to say things differently to reach different people that, kind of like speaking their language. So I think it's a very interesting idea, and I like it a lot. So if you're going to do something, I encourage you to do that.
That's great. No, I think there's a lot of there's a lot of heart for that, and because it's funny, I did a blog post at one point that talked about being an English major and how powerful I thought that was as a background for business in general, not just for my own career. And like all these people started appearing and said, "Yeah, I was an English major too, and nobody thought it was going to be worthwhile." And now, look at us, we're creating content, and everybody wants us. And so it was a little bit of like that.
Wow. I have a degree in English and a degree in education, and truthfully, that was what I thought would actually be the most useful and apply the best in whatever the world, you had to read and write and communicate. And I felt like at that point, that was going to be a good thing for me. And I did, teach school for a bit, but I've used those degrees and those learning skills in many, many ways.
It sounds like you had a lot more foresight than I did, because when I was doing my English major, I just did it because I just thought it was interesting and I liked it, but I had no connection to whether that would actually prepare me for anything useful in my life.
Well, it just made sense to me that you had to be literate in this world to kind of get ahead. You had to be, you had to know how to read and write and articulate and communicate. And unfortunately, the kids today that are coming up the pike, many of the generations, that are coming up with probably too much technology, they're not talking to each other. They're not sitting around and shooting the shoot and having enough conversations with each other. It's like you said, people are like sitting there and looking down at their phones. They're not even catching people's eyes or, trying to catch people's attention or looking, kind of what's passing them by right at that moment. I think that's one of the liabilities of technology. So I wanted to just, ask you one more thing here, and then I want you to give, talk about your books real quick. You talk about being useful instead of salesy, and I come from a traditional sales background. And, I think what made me successful in that business was I was so people-oriented. I got the fact that, you had to somehow make a connection with this client. Otherwise, they may buy something from you one time, but it wasn't going to last. So talk about that whole be useful instead of salesy.
Well, so I think, I mean, one of the things we learn right in the beginning, if you've ever taken a sales course or sales training, is this idea of always be closing, ABC, always be closing,
right?
Yep.
And I think that the idea behind being useful and helpful is if you're always helping and if you're always providing
yep.
value, then your closing happens by itself. And
yep.
I've seen this over and over again in the work that I get done, whether it's selling in a keynote speech because somebody said, wow, this guy's not only going to show up and deliver a keynote, but he's also going to help us find sponsors. He's going to go out and have drinks with the event attendees, and he's not going to jump on a plane as soon as he gets off the stage. And so he's going to have an impact. It's part of it is giving people that sense of, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to try and be as helpful as possible and provide as much value as possible. And if I do that, then I trust that you're going to see how much value that is. You're going to be able to make it work. And even if I lose one deal one time because, yeah, this happens to me. I mean, I have the benefit of kind of selling, quote, unquote, a lot of different situations where I will be in front of an audience for, you know, a keynote. And so you have to keep selling that over and over again because you're doing one-off things, right? And so I see all of these different situations where if I can be helpful and if I can say this is what I'm going to do and then I show up and actually do it, people talk about that and then they come back to you.
Well, when you know, the biggest by far change in the sales world is that the consumer really, the power has shifted to the consumer because they have so much choice. And they can decide who they want to do business with. So if you're not building like, know, and trust with somebody, you're probably not going to get the business. They have to believe that you have their back. And when you are authentically and you know, honestly trying to help people, you are selling them. You're selling them on the fact that you care about them. You have an idea for a solution for them. And that, you know, you want to help them. And truthfully, as simple and as silly as that sounds, it's really true today. It really is true today. So I think this is a very good idea, is that by being useful, you are selling.
Yeah, I think the best salespeople, they see that philosophy reflected in how well they do.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about your new book, Non-Obvious. Of course, you are the author of Likeonomics, which I discovered you during that book and you during that time. I added you to one of my blog posts because I loved the whole idea of what that book was about. And that's what I told you when I first met you, that, oh, my God, you're the author of Likeonomics. that was cool for me. But talk a little bit, we have about 3 minutes. Talk a little bit about Non-Obvious and also give out your contact info, your social media info, so people can learn more about you.
Okay, yeah. So everything is basically aligned to my name. So if you can figure out how to spell that, you'll find me. My website is just myname.com, rohitbhargava.com. My Twitter handle is the same thing. I have a lot of different blog posts and articles and videos and things like that out there, so you'll be able to easily find a lot of that stuff, and my contact details are on my site as well. In terms
yes.
of the book, it was sort of inspired by 5 years of doing these trend reports and wanting to now, in the fifth year, help people uncover the skills for themselves to be able to predict the future. So that's the bold promise of the book, that the book will help you predict the future. And the way
Excellent.
I do that is I share a couple of different habits and things that people can start to embrace. I have a lot of actionable tips like do this, do this, do this. I have some great ideas based on examples from real companies. Here's what a real company is doing in this industry or that industry. Here's what you can take from that, and here's how you can use it. So a lot of the book is about that. That's basically the first part. It's how do you think differently, how do you embrace that, and how do you predict the future. The second part is 15 specific trends for 2015. So I do 15 new trends every year. So this book has my 15 trends for 2015, specifically
Excellent.
What they are, and examples around them, and then how to use them in your business. And then the last
perfect
part of the book is some models for a couple of different workshops that you can run within your own team, within your own kind of network of folks, to put some of these trends and ideas into action. And it's all based on workshops that I typically get called into larger companies to deliver. But it's got all those tools and a step-by-step approach so you can kind of use that same methodology for yourself.
Trend curator Rohit Bhargava, thank you so much for joining us today. And let me spell his name for you, Rohit Bhargava, or just go to this page on my Blog Talk Radio page, and I have a link for his site. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to speak with you again. We wish you, as always, the best, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. And please come back and visit us again next time on The Metropolis.
Thank you for listening to our Top Small Business Podcast. Please share us with others and come back and visit again soon. To learn more about Deborah and how you can be in the spotlight, visit DeborahShaneToolbox.com and rock somebody's day, whatever you do.